Thank you for joining IEB There. And now your host, Randall Rothenberg. Over to you, Randall.
Good afternoon. It is June 11th, 2020. I'm Randall Rothenberg, the CEO of the IAB, the Digital Marketing and Media Industries Trade Body. And if it's 2 p.m. on the East Coast, you know it's time to IAB There. That's our daily live stream in which we connect the digital advertising ecosystem to itself so we can discuss all things digital, all things advertising, all things media, and all things marketing. Our topic for today actually is much larger than the digital advertising and media and marketing ecosystem. It's about change. It's about social change and political change in the United States and ideally in the world. And we're going to discuss what we're calling the change equity movement with our special guest, JT Batson, the founder and CEO of Hudson MX. JT, come on to the video stream with us.
Hello, Randall.
Hello, JT. Great to see you again. It's been a while.
It has been a very long while. Wonderful to see you as well.
So we've known each other for a long time. So I'm going to ask some intentionally stupid questions just to set the tone. And we've known each other actually in kind of different incarnations, business incarnations,
yes,
and kind of social political incarnations.
Yes.
But first, I want to ask you, what is Hudson MX? What are you doing for a living right now?
Sure. So Hudson MX is a company I started with some colleagues and also actually my brother about 4.5 years ago, focused on helping the world's largest media agencies transform themselves to be able to deliver optimal results for their clients and ultimately for themselves.
And how are you doing that? I mean, who are your competitors in the marketplace?
Sure. So we started about, as I said, four and a half years ago, and we've scaled a lot as a business. We're actually now up to 325 people. And early on, there's a training program that I put together. And in the training, I'd listed out potential competitors. And there was one that was listed in there that people always struggle finding when they Google for it, and that was inertia. I can't tell you the number of very intelligent, smart, seasoned, you know, advertising execs who joined the company who came and like, hey, who's this company Inertia? And I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges that we've dealt with is, has been that you've got this huge ecosystem, you know, all these different players who are all very powerful and have very strong incentives around the market staying the way it is. And so that's, been our biggest challenge, but luckily, we've had some great traction and the ball is rolling.
And you're trying to really prepare the way kind of from an infrastructure, process, expertise,
yes,
standpoint, prepare the way for what is actually staring us in the face, the convergence of the video ecosystem primarily.
Correct. Absolutely. And I think I'm glad you talked to, so people and the process, because I think the people part of this is a critical element. It's not just, and obviously, we're the infrastructure company, but a big part of successful infrastructure is making sure that people are equipped to actually take advantage of it. And it's my belief that if we can provide this new infrastructure, there's going to be a great wave of innovation that you'll see on the buy and sell side by virtue of having modern plumbing when you're used to having aqueducts. And so who knows what will happen. And I think what's been cool is we look at some of these very large agencies, very sophisticated. They're taking very different paths going forward around how they're actually going to use, this new infrastructure around how they're going to execute specifically video going forward. So I think you're going to see some agencies consolidate around buying in a very client specific way. Others are going to be very focused on audience activation. Others are going to really be focused on automation and being able to strip out transaction costs so that the cost to transact television looks a lot more like the cost to transact digital. So they're all taking, some of them are related, but I think they're taking very strong points of view around where they're making their bets, which is cool to me. to see this sort of innovation happening in what is historically been thought of as the most mature of all, you know, big pies of the advertising space.
Yeah, well, you know, when I came over to the IAB, it's 14 years ago now. One of the things that I said, it was in fact in the first set of presentations I gave to the board, and it was based on the work that we had been doing at my old consulting firm, Booz Allen Hamilton, was that the both the media sales force and the agency of tomorrow were going to resemble McKinsey or Bain practices a hell of a lot more than they were going to resemble the publisher sales force or the agency of today. And that it was going to be easier for the publishers to get there because to the degree that technology was an underpinning, the publishing industry has always had technology as part of its basis, and the agency business, not so much. So they needed companies like you.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. And if you think about when, so for those who don't know, I was the chief strategy officer at Mediaocean. So I'm very familiar with the sort of the existing infrastructure that agencies use. And
in fact, you helped create the modern Mediaocean by helping to merge what had been Donovan Data Systems into MediaBank.
Absolutely. And I think the one of the things that's underappreciated as you look at the state of the market today is when agencies, it's only recently that technology is a front office capability of agencies. It historically was a back office function, then became a middle office function. Mm-hmm. And it's only been the latest wave of incarnation of the role of the media agency where software has been and technology has been at the forefront. And I think it's been that change which has necessitated the need for new plumbing because you can only do so much on an old foundation. And so I think that's the why now and why so many people have engaged with us is because technology is front and center to their future in a way that historically that wasn't the case.
So now I'm asking you these questions because I'm trying to establish your bona fides as a business leader. And in fact, you're not just a business leader. You were a senior exec at Rubicon Project, top programmatic company. You were CRO of Cumulus, trying to bring Cumulus, the radio company, into the digital age. You are basically a programmatic data steeped nerd who is also a longtime company leader in some of the nerdiest parts of the digital advertising and media industry. Would you say that is an honest and true statement?
That is an honest and true statement. And if I could flip around my camera and show you my bookshelf, then it would be a confirmation of how big of a nerd I am. So yes.
What interests me here is that you're also a nerd with a kind of passionately human side and a belief that business leadership not only can, but must make a difference in social and political change. And the reason I'm raising this is I was just really gratified and impressed and happy that last week you and I did something at almost exactly the same time. It was a little bit scary that there was a bit of like simultaneous pressing the buttons on an idea,
sure.
A change that you were making in Hudson MX in terms of how you relate to your team, the deployment of your team, and your commitment to social and political change. So that's a setup. Tell us what you did.
Sure. Well, I think before I get to that, this is something I don't even know that my family knows this. So before I started Hudson MX, I had spent a lot of time thinking about what I wanted to do when I grow up. I've been fortunate to work with some great colleagues and great companies and could really ponder what I wanted to do next. And I really, really, really strongly vacillated between going to law school in my 30s, mm-hmm. which is obviously not normal, And the reason for that is both my parents are actually civil rights lawyers. So I grew up, you know, the family business is essentially civil rights law.
And you're from where originally?
From Augusta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. My folks moved to Augusta, Georgia from Washington, D.C. After law school. And my dad was mainly chasing my mother, but my mother was going there to work for Georgia Legal Services, where she's worked for her entire career. And I was trying to, you know, I was wrestling with some of these same concepts that I'll get to your question in a second, but I was wrestling with the concepts of how do I make an impact around social justice, which is something that's always been near and dear to my heart. Thought about law school as a natural option because I knew that, but actually ultimately chose to re-enter the business arena because I felt it was important for business leaders to take accountability and responsibility for helping improve our society more broadly, not just make money. And the when to your specific question, when Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia was killed, and then obviously George Floyd in Minneapolis, it crushed me. I mean, it hit me like a wave that I have never been hit before. And I remember calling one of my colleagues over the weekend, right as this first happened, and said, "We've got to do something." He was like, "Well, why don't you take some time to reflect on and think about what, you know, how you'd want to approach this." And I really struggled for days around what's the right way for me personally to respond and what's the right way for us as a company to respond. And I think ultimately what I did was give a very clear message to the company that my personal values and our company values are Black Lives Matter, and that we need to, particularly, you know, white Americans need to acknowledge the systematic and structural racism that exists in this country. And that three, that we were going to do something about it. And the, you know, very tangible thing that we could do was dedicate PTO for all Hudson employees, specifically around civic engagement. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool is off the back of me sharing my own point of view on this, but talking about the civic engagement, I've gotten photos and stories of all sorts of employees who since, you know, in less than a week have actually gone out and already, you know, jumped right in. And so it's been really heartening to see, you know, see that play out in real life.
It was very, very similar, but with, of course, without the background. Well, it's actually, you know, similar even in background, because both of my parents were passionately committed politically to not just to the Democratic Party, but to the liberal wings of the Democratic Party. I still remember my mom was one of the founders of the anti-war movement in our hometown, marched in and got jeered in the Memorial Day parade, and I guess it was 1968, you know, at the peak of those tensions. So also raised with a, you know, that commitment to personally investing in social justice. And, you know, with us, we had a similar thing. I mean, George Floyd's murder happened, and coming on top of not just the Ahmaud Arbery, but also the incident in Central Park, which fortunately had no bloodshed, but was horrifying to see, with a birder who I've gone birding with. It had the same thing. And then the outpouring of anguish, especially from our Black American colleagues.
Sure.
And we said, we've got to do something. So the first thing we did was call everybody together just for a meeting, just to talk. Just
important.
To hear and communicate the pain. And the thing that was most powerful about it was also the realization of how many people on your staff, are on your team, are multicultural, like literally multicultural. I have white team members who have Black children. I have team members I thought were white and they're not, they're Black. And the pain that they feel and the fear about sending a son outside, you know, to the store and worrying about whether that child is going to be able to come back is, it's different than reading about in the newspaper. And I had the same reaction you did. What can we do? What can I do? And I'm interested, it's leading to a question, because the standard answer to that over the past X number of years, which always happens at times like this, is, oh, let's ramp up our D&I initiatives.
Sure.
And that felt to me like absolutely important, but not enough. And it sounds to me like you had the same reaction. So tell me what led you to this.
I think that's exactly right. And so I was struggling as a human with what was going on and struggling with the fact that our country, who I love so much, was not living up to its ideals. So I was struggling very much personally in that regard. And then I was struggling with how do we as a company not paper over this with the historic ways that companies have papered over sort of important moments in our history where we just move on and get back to selling widgets, whatever our widget is. And I think it's why it took me a while, frankly, and took us a while to wrap our head around what's the right approach to where we're not just solving what we can solve at Hudson, which, by the way, is super important. All of those things are critical, and I don't mean to imply anything else. And we all can strive to do better on that and do better on that. But I wanted to make sure that we were had some way to go attack it at its root cause. This was the best we could come up with. Maybe there are better ways, and I'm all ears and want to learn and do more. But it was, Randall, to your point, I really, really, really wanted to put thought into this, as did a lot of my colleagues, around, you know, how do we, go attack and not do the typical, say the right thing. By the way, saying the right thing is important because words matter. Words matter a lot. But actions matter even more. And so I wanted to make sure that was central to our culture and our values as a company. And so that's why we put this policy in place.
Yeah. So we did the same thing, as you know. The turning point for me is I was on a call with a couple other trade association heads and the CMO of one of the largest advertisers in the world. We were going to talk about issues in the television industry. That was the purpose of the call. And the CMO hijacked it. And he said, the only thing I can think about now, the only thing I'm interested in, is how do we stop racism in the United States? And I was really struck by that, because he didn't say, how do we increase diversity and inclusion in our industry? He said, how do we stop racism in the United States? Diversity and inclusion in our industry is extraordinarily important, but it's not political. Stopping racism in the United States is a political and social change statement. And those are fundamentally different. So I came away from that and I said, you know, same thing as you. We had statements that we were making. They were strong statements, but they didn't have a, okay, so what to them? And we came up with the same idea, give people time off, paid time off to invest in a political or social effort of their choice. And we did the calculation. I mean, to me, the math here is, it's actually extraordinarily powerful, because in our little nonprofit, about 70 people, giving them 2 days of PTO a month now through November, that equals a total of 840 days of investment, which is the equivalent, if you figure that each year is 261 workdays, that's the equivalent in a tiny company of having a department of 3 FTEs just working on political and social change. Then I did a little more math, which astonished me. If we could get 100 mid-market companies, say 1,000 people each, to do exactly the same thing, That unleashes 1.2 million days of people power or change equity into the marketplace. That's the equivalent of a 4,600 person company working full time for a year on political or social change. So I was struck that what Hudson MX have done, what IAB have done, it would be fantastic if we can turn this into the foundation of a national movement.
Agreed. And I think, I applaud what you guys are doing. And I love the fact that you're trying to spread the word to get more business leaders. And let's face it, almost always white business leaders to step up and help take responsibility for addressing these inequities that are, very apparent in our country. And I think the more that we all raise our hand and say, hey, we're going to actually take action on this, and we're going to make sure that it's a cultural norm of our organization to focus on these issues, I think is critical. And that's the reason for us why we created special PTO days for this, was so that it was clear. And then we also, in our all hands meetings, are going to be highlighting recent examples of people engaging in whatever way is important and relevant to them. So that way it stays top of mind forever around why this is so central to our values as an organization.
It's very interesting because, again, what fascinates me is that we kind of spontaneously combusted around the same idea. And it sounds like we're spontaneously combusting around some of the, kind of the underlying management approaches to it, because we said, the essence of this is it's decentralized. The individual gets to determine herself where to invest her time.
Yes.
You want to invest your time in a political campaign? Fantastic. A phone bank for fundraising for a charity of your choice? Fantastic. Volunteering at your church or mosque or synagogue? Fantastic. But we also, same thing, we're making our D&I council meetings mandatory now. Everybody has to go. So it's a second set of all hands. And we're using those for report backs. What are you doing? Why? What does it mean to you? How are you seeing a return on your investment? So we're hoping that will have the effect of kind of really instantiating this in the culture of the company, that this is not just an addition to what we're doing, but it's essential. It's central to what we do as a company.
Well, one of the things, and this is definitely not something I've talked about publicly before, one of the key drivers in us actually scaling our business in Atlanta, so actually Atlanta is our largest office as a company, was my belief that would lead to a very diverse company. We've been very intentional from day one of making sure our offices are mainly New York and Atlanta, the two largest ones, that they reflect the communities where we're based. I'm a big believer in making that key part of the organization as a company. But to our earlier conversation, I just don't think that's enough anymore. We have to create an opportunity for people to go make an impact, to try to address some of these more systematic and structural issues, because not in any way, shape, or form that Hudson is perfect, by no means. But let's say you could create a mythical, perfect office environment. Well, your colleagues are human, and so they have to deal with the human realities outside of work. Mm-hmm. And that structural, whatever mythical work environment you can create, and God knows we should aim to create that, people are still people and still have to live in the world. And so we need to make it to where it's not okay. And it's declarative for me as their CEO and their colleague, that, what's happening out there is not okay. And that we need to step up and try to address that. And so I think that's critical from my view on this.
Let me ask you some practical questions about how you're managing this. And I'm asking them actually because I need help. I need, this is how, we originally were going to give more PTO. The original idea was one day a week through November. And then our head of talent warned against it, but for a very real and I thought astute reason. And she said, you know, people are already skittish about taking paid time off because they're afraid to be seen as not working hard enough during this time of real economic constraint on all of us. And in addition, they're working at home, everybody. And their idea is, you know, they can't even take the PTO that they've already earned because what are they going to do? Move to another chair. So how are you, encouraging people in Hudson MX to actually invest the time?
So that's a great question. And that was one of the, when we decided on this as a concept, we actually spent a lot of time thinking about, well, how do you make it to where everyone actually does it? And so that was, you know, part of it was by, you know, calling them out as special days. Part of it was around highlighting it. Part of it was, you know, me sharing my personal feelings, both as a human, but also as a CEO around this moment and what it's meant to me. And I think that created space for people to both share what people shared with me has been remarkable. But then also we've seen it. People have gone and done stuff and mm-hmm. already gone. They're doing it. And so and what to me, what's amazing is it's not just that they're doing it. It's the fact that they feel like they can share it with their colleagues and be proud about it. And that gets me, that people feel like their colleagues are right there with them. So by no means are we perfect either on how to solve for, you know, making it to where people can actually go take the action they want to take. But the early signs of, you know, they're double digit numbers of people who've shared internally what they've done in under a week, which to me, that's pretty cool in terms of early signs of progress for something we're all figuring out together.
That is fantastic because we haven't had our first meeting yet. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm investing my time because I'm taking it too. You got to lead by example.
Right, absolutely.
In a project I'm doing on behalf of a friend who happens to be a U.S. senator and is one of the major proponents of vote by mail in the United States. So put together a team of top advertising agency strategists and creative and leaders to see if we can, you know, create some kind of viral campaign around vote by mail. I'm interested. You're a Georgian native. I don't know if you're still voting in Georgia or not, but you must have had an opinion on this fiasco of, Election Day just 2 days ago.
Yeah. What's unfortunate, most unfortunate, is you could see it all coming. And, you know, these were intentional steps. And
right. Because the governor was Secretary of State, and he, as Secretary of State, he was highly involved in voter suppression campaigns.
Sure. And you know, look, growing up in the South, like actually all parts of the country and world have interesting political histories. And, you know, a lot of folks, I was a political science major, so I studied a lot of this. And look, there's rough and tumble stuff that has been going on for, you know, ever in terms of different sides employing different strategies to, you know, tilt the scale a little bit in their favor. However, this isn't a slight tilt. This is, you know, dropping all of the weight on one side and you know, flipping it the other way. And I think it's embarrassing and it's sad and it's wrong. And I think just like I'm proud of you know, being an American, I'm, you know, exceptionally proud to be from Georgia. I hope that, and I see this in colleagues and in friends that I grew up with who are there, who are sick of it. And regardless of their political affiliations, are sick of democracy not being, you know, what it should be in this country, sick of what, you know, the sort of systemic racism means for their neighbors and their friends and their colleagues and their family members. So, I am disgusted about what's gone on there, but I am hopeful that more and more Americans are, and certainly fellow Georgians are going, no, this is not acceptable. We want to do something about it.
Yeah,
I applaud your work there.
It was quite striking, you know, to see those lines. I mean, it was obviously heartening to see how many people wanted to go out and vote.
Yes.
But it was disheartening to see the obstructions that were intentionally put in their place by a governor who was Secretary of State, and as Secretary of State was in charge of the voting structures there, and who intentionally made changes that would make it more difficult to vote, and now has a Secretary of State who is now aiding him in that process.
Without question.
Yeah, it would be nice to, it's nice to have that exposed so that it can be overturned.
Agreed.
Let me ask you again, as the, we're in the same industry, we know, between us, probably thousands of people,
you know,
who are senior executives at hundreds of ad agencies, publishing companies, brands, data companies, technology companies, platforms, you name it.
Yeah.
And a lot of these companies are bucking some of the larger economic trends. They're not doing that badly in
yes.
economic crisis. How do we get them? What can we do to get them kind of attuned to this thing that we're calling the change equity movement? How do we get them to realize how simple it is to just implement this and you know, let the people power loose in your company?
Well, I think the first is by talking about it. I historically have not talked about these things publicly because I had rightly or wrongly had sort of divorced my personal feelings on a lot of these issues and my personal activities from what I did work-wise. And ultimately, I realized that that's not possible and that's not right. And I think first is by acknowledging that as we talked about earlier, as business leaders and in particular white business leaders, we need to step up. And I think, just saying it and talking about it. And then I think, you've inspired me to actually reach out to friends and colleagues who work at other companies and say, hey, you guys should consider doing this too, in whatever form makes sense for your business. But you know, if you believe that your team is as talented and creative and entrepreneurial as I bet you do, then imagine what they can do for society if you, you know, create space for them to go make change. And so, it's got to start at the top, and it's got to be something that you do yourself, whatever is pertinent to what you care about and you feel like you can do. But I think it's, you know, we just got to. Look, we're in the advertising business. We know we have to spread the word. I think continuing to do that in both, in avenues and venues like this, but then also personal outreach saying, hey, this is important. This matters. Let's do this.
Yeah. I keep trying to find, new language to describe it. So my latest way of describing it is it's a matching 401k program for people's time. Company gives them time. The people give in time. Change happens.
And
it accrues dividends the more you invest.
That was without question.
The idea of, it was that with our little company, it's actually the equivalent of three FTEs working full time. That was pretty impressive. If I can get 100 mid-market companies to release 1.2 million days, that actually overturns old structures, old systems. And creates meaningful social change, positive social change in the United States. So,
without question, I think one of the things I really struggled with was, how does little me, given I've got a business to run and I've got other things to do, how do I, put my hand in the air and say, enough is enough. I need to do something about it. And I think the idea that we all, literally everyone, can also, put their hand in the air and say, enough is enough, and put themselves in the arena to try to make a difference in something they care about and that they know how to do, I think is powerful. And just seeing that pathway, I think is something that was very freeing for me to know that, hey, there is something we can do about this, and there's something we should do about this. And it's important that we do it now.
But it's also based on something that I think often takes people a long time to recognize. But when they recognize it, they realize it's been staring them in the face forever and ever. And this is what I mean, people, in this case, I mean, people in business leadership positions. At some point in your career, you come to the realization that one good person in your company or in your team makes an extraordinary amount of difference. You know, it's like if somebody comes in who knows what she's doing, is really enthusiastic, a guy comes in with ideas, is able to execute, your business changes overnight. One person can make a difference. And so if you can actually unleash that difference-making capability, not just on things like, how am I going to improve the effectiveness of my ad spend? But unleash it towards things like, how am I going to make voting rights better? How am I going to get more people out to vote? How am I going to get more money funding this soup kitchen? That you can actually do it with just a handful of people and a handful of hours. I think that's the power of what you've done.
I believe that wholeheartedly, and I'm like I said, in under a week, I've already seen, you know, lots of examples people have already shared of what they're doing, and so I'm you know, thrilled to see what folks do next. It's very exciting.
Well, JT Batson, thank you for being an avatar of the change equity movement. You and I hope are going to continue to collaborate on this and beat the drum, trying and recruit more companies, more company leaders, more people power into it. So thank you for being a guest on IAB There today.
Thanks again, Randall. It's great to see you.
Great. See you again soon. Folks, on tomorrow's IAB There, we are excited to welcome Helen Lin, the Chief Digital Officer of Publicis, where we'll discuss agile marketing in the COVID and post-COVID world. IAB There is a production of the Interactive Advertising Bureau. Our show today was produced by Connor Healy, Joe Ounce, John Ward, and Twafika Mohinuddin. I'm Randall Rothenberg, the CEO of the IAB. Thank you for watching. Come back tomorrow, because if it's 2 p.m. Eastern time on a weekday, you know it's time to IAB There. Bye-bye.
It's a great opportunity for all of our clients to come together and get to see the showcase of all the great content that's available from our largest digital partners.
We like to learn what the partners are doing in the digital space. We like to understand what's new, how is the content platforms changing and evolving with the rapid fire digital space.